Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the second part of the Talking Rugby Union World Cup preview special extravaganza that myself and Chris are doing right now. We're just about to move on to Pool C, so if you haven't listened to the first part, please go back and listen and leave the first part a review as well. Massively helps with getting us up the Apple Podcast rankings. And now we'll move on to Pool C, which of course is England's pool. We'll hear from Chris in a second about how he thought England fared against Italy at St James's Park, a game that we both attended. However, here are some quotes from Ben Mercer, who will be covering Pool C exclusively for Talking Rugby Union, as well as quotes from Mark Wilson and Josh Beaumont.
You're looking at your pool there, Ben, and you've probably got maybe two teams, maybe even three teams who could realistically think they can go deep in the competition. And obviously, we'll start with an England perspective. I mean, how did you sum up sort of the warm-up games that you managed to see?
Oh, well, I mean, the obvious kind of highlights is absolute demolition of Ireland. And Ireland having been, you know, well, I think they're back at world number one technically now, but they've been the kind of leading European team for a long time, and England really made them look pretty poor. I think the thing with England now is they've really got a bit of an all-court threat. They've got some massive ball carriers everyone's quite scared of, justifiably. You know, it's the most kind of confident I've been about an England team since 2003.
Yeah. Do you think those ball carriers are probably Eddie Jones's main weapon then, Ben?
Personally, I think the reintegration of George Ford takes the load off Owen Farrell, but it also means that they can just play that little bit wider than they can for everybody else, and then that opens up the space even more so for Billy Vunipola close to the ruck, Manu Tolai a bit wider, Joe Flock in his ear if they want to use him. You know, and even it's easy to even overlook people like Anthony Watson, who are like slightly bigger blokes than you give them credit for. And, you know, they've got some serious speed out wide as well. So, I mean, they're pretty formidable when you take them as a group.
For that first game against Tonga, will you be going with a Ford at 10 and Farrell at 12 then, just going off what you said?
I think you would look like, for me, I think the two of them in tandem is England's best lineup. And I think there was a point where what they always wanted to do was pair the two of them with Manu Tolai.
Yeah.
And they've kind of not done that for a while. And George Ford maybe had a year where he's on the out a bit. But judging on recent evidence, say that, I mean, for me, that'd be their strongest kind of midfield. Mm-hmm. Whether they'll roll that out against Tonga, whether they'll kind of mix it around. I mean, people like Henry Slade, Belly, you know, through injury, haven't been able to have a game. Whether they give people, you know, like Slade a bit of a chance and give him a run out, then, you know, I'd have thought people like that might well get picked that Tonga game.
Yeah, most definitely, Ben. And obviously, they played Italy last Friday at St James's Park and came away with a convincing scoreline. Will that give them a lot of confidence going into that first game?
I thought that was quite a flat game, really. I mean, the first half, it was not much of anything really happened. And I think there was obviously a big goal from quality. But I don't think they'd be taking too much in that. They'd be pleased to get away without anyone being hurt and, you know, being able to go into the tournament with them, you know, quite a lot of variety to pick from in most of the positions, you've got to say. I mean, they're obviously leaning on Ben Youngs very heavily at nine, and I think Billy Vunipola is another one. They kind of, some people saying it's a bit of a risk to play him, but they'll be pleased that they've got him firing going into the tournament.
Yeah, most definitely, Ben. And looking at a couple of the other teams that are in England's pool, obviously France, we always know they to expect the unexpected with them. I mean, three times runners-up of the competition, and their opening game is against Argentina. So how crucial do you think that game's going to be in Pool C?
I think that's massive because, like you said, France are incredibly unpredictable. It's a team, it's a squad with a lot of kind of multi-positional guys. I mean, centres and wings were very interchangeable. The 9s and 10s and 12s were interchangeable. In the forwards, they seem a bit kind of like they're going to be swapping a lot of their taller back rows in and out of the second row.
Yeah.
You kind of don't know if you're picking a team against them what they're going to pick, which is very difficult to prepare for. And then the flip side of that is Argentina have a kind of very settled team from the Super Rugby competition, you know, most of the Jaguares, and then supplemented with a few of the European guys. But actually, Argentina have got a great record against France.
Yeah.
And have often done for teams like Ireland, they've done for a couple of times historically. So, you know, that's a massive straight up, you know, particularly in a tough pool where one of you is looking at going home in the group stage.
Mm, definitely, Ben. And just finally on Pool C, you've got the other two teams of USA and Tonga. I mean, USA continually head in the right direction in terms of international rugby, in terms of the growth of the game over there. But if they're going to cause an upset in this pool stages, who do you think it could be against?
That's a tough call. I mean, I would probably said Argentina. You know, Argentina have really had a great rugby championship and have, you know, caused a lot of problems there. So I think it's going to be very difficult for USA to pinch a result, whether they pick a, you know, they get a day where France melt down or not. You know, that might be a game for them to target, but I'd thought it'd be very difficult for them this tournament to take a game off one of those teams.
Yeah, and is that a similar approach for Tonga? Do you think it's going to be quite tough for them to get anything out of this pool?
Yeah, I think Tonga are probably, they're probably the weakest out of the three Pacific Island teams that are there. I mean, I'd say Fiji are the team that really, you know, they're getting fit and they're getting better. They've got guys in the forwards who are kind of not, they're in the best European teams. So I think Fiji out the island, the teams are the guys that could probably do the most damage. And I'd say probably Tonga, unfortunately, are looking at being the kind of the weakest out of those three teams.
The great thing about the camp is that we're still building. We're getting closer as a team, you know, and you know, we're starting to become more together. And you know, some of the performances we put on these warm-up games have been really good. But you know, the journey for us is only just starting. You know, we can't think that it's you know that all these World Cup warm-up games are it. Now we're in the business end, and now it's starting for us. So hopefully we can go on and keep on improving.
I guess it's trying to hit that peak, not in the first game, but somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I think that the World Cup's going to test us. It's going to, you know, some games aren't going to go our way, and some games are. But it's how we react to it and how we react to the challenges. And today was a perfect example of dealing with a certain challenge.
Probably just like that power game that England are kind of renowned for in the last couple of years. They're always solid in defence, especially when they bring that line speed. They play under immense pressure, and then just, you know, when Billy's playing at eight and, you know, the whole pack just gets going forward and they're a tough team to break. And, you know, the halfbacks are very smart in terms of the kicking game. They just pin you back as a team. So probably just the ability for England to put teams under great pressure, and then they just seem to be out-muscled teams as well. So obviously they went well at the set piece. So I think, you know, they're probably feeling a good position going forward now.
Yeah, do you think that's sort of their main weapon then, Josh, in the World Cup, to use that power game?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, as long as it's a strong set piece, dominant set piece, and they'll feel like they're always in the game. And, you know, they're probably just trying to work on that, getting that 80-minute performance rather than just sharing glimpses in, you know, little 10-minute blocks at the moment.
Yeah, and obviously the final game was on Friday night, and I bet you're glad you missed it because it wasn't the best of games. Me and Joe were up in Newcastle watching it. But in terms of England getting a 37-0 win, is that going to be great for their confidence going into a World Cup where not many people know what to expect?
Yeah, I think from a defensive point of view, it's a lot closer to you. They're going to be very happy about that. And yeah, obviously the second half performance was much better than the first half. That probably is a sign of, you know, how fit they're feeling, and you know, probably just puts them in a good mindset for that World Cup if they know that they're, you know, managing to perform in the second half, not just the, you know, that first half performance. And so I think, yeah, they'll be feeling in a good spot right now.
Yeah, just finally on the World Cup, Josh, obviously we both want to see England do well. I mean, what do you think they need to do if they're going to achieve glory out in Japan?
I think they need to stay disciplined. I think it's a major one. I think with new laws coming in, they can't afford to, you know, these big crucial moments, big games. They've got, you know, some two huge group games, and just probably keeping that composure and trusting their abilities and, you know, systems put in place and ensuring that they've always got 15 players on the pitch and not giving away silly penalties. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. Can England win the World Cup?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a lot of excitement, I think, first and foremost, generated from the Ireland game. Myself and you were there as well, Joe, at Twickenham. Brilliant bank holiday weekend and a brilliant performance by England. And, you know, a couple of weeks passed and it was quite exciting for it to be going to the North East and England's send-off, really. And the first half was very underwhelming for the fans inside St James's Park. You know, there was boos at half-time when Farrell opted to kick the penalty instead of kicking to the corner. But then the second half, England came alive. Whatever was said at half-time spurred them on. And if from an England perspective, and probably from Eddie Jones's point of view, yes, it might not have been the best performance in the world, but they came away with a 37-0 win, which will probably give them confidence going into the World Cup. But you know, three wins from four games in the warm-up matches. I think England will be pleased with that going into Sunday's match with Tonga.
Yeah, but of course the only blip was that loss to Wales, which I think was 6-13 at the Principality. The only one that was officially not a home game.
Yeah, that might be a little bit worrying for England, but I think if you look at the games, obviously they played Ireland in the Six Nations away from home, they won that one, and that's probably something that'll give them a bit of a boost, a bit of confidence. But that Wales game, I think it was very much Wales played it like a test match. They controlled it, and it wasn't worrying. It was a little bit like, well, England have not got really a plan B. Well, they've got the plan A, they haven't got the plan B again. But I think they showed against Ireland exactly the creativity they had. And it was it with George Ford again operating at 10, and when he came on against Italy, he sort of helped unleash Farrell a little bit more, which helped England, was a bit of a catalyst for England. So it will be incredibly interesting to see what Eddie goes with on, I think it's Friday afternoon or early hours of Friday morning when he announces his squad for that Tonga game, whether he goes with the Ford Farrell or goes with Farrell at 10. But yeah, and I know what you mean, Joe, that game against Wales might have been concerning, but overall I think England will be pleased going into Japan.
Yeah, England have brought in, I'd say, probably three relative unknowns to the tournament. Of course, Rory McConachie being one of them, Willie Hines being the other, and the final one, of course, being Lewis Ludlam of Northampton Saints. It doesn't seem like England have got the most settled squad for a Rugby World Cup campaign in comparison to maybe some of the other teams around them.
I don't think Eddie's had a settled squad for quite a while, has he? Every time we have a conversation in the office or we have a conversation on the phone about what team do you think he's going to pick, there's always the debate of whether who's going to start at fullback, who's going to start the wings, who's going to be the 9-10, who's going to be the centre partnership. And it doesn't seem like Eddie has his first choice side, but is that a bad thing? I'd say so, going into such a big tournament. He's had a long time to think about it, but then you look at it on the flip side, Joe, is that it's his call, it's his selections. I know injuries have played the part, but it's his selections which have made him, his selection, sorry, which have decided whether he goes with this team or that team. So it will, again, it's going to be interesting to see who he picks, because Willie Hines definitely maybe shut up a few people in the warm-up games. Thought he played really, really well, arguably better than Ben Youngs, even though Youngs was named man of the match against Italy, to our amazement.
Which to everyone's amazement. I looked around, I don't know if you were writing your piece that was going to go out after the game. I looked around and I distinctly remember someone at the Daily Mail saying some words that I won't repeat on the podcast, yeah. But it was definitely a surprise. And you just mentioned fullback, actually. Anthony Watson played fullback for England against Italy at St James's.
Yeah.
Me and you both said he had a good game, but that was only because there was no high balls for him to contend with.
Yeah, I think... Obviously, his injury's been a disappointment for him. And yes, it looked like he was quite assured at fullback because he had no high balls to contend with. But I just think it would be not a gamble, but I think with Jones going with Daly for so long at fullback, it'd be unwise for him not to go with Daly. If Watson would be more than capable of doing the job against Tonga. We know England will probably dominate from 0 minute to 80 minute, but to the final whistle, sorry. But I think Daly will be his first choice fullback, definitely for the first couple of games at least, and then maybe for that USA game, that's where you may see Anthony Watson operate at fullback. But and this is the thing, England do have the options, and it's a selection headache that Eddie's caused himself. But he'll be happy that he's managed to see Anthony Watson get a few minutes under his belt after such an injury-plagued season.
And it does seem like now England have worked out a way to basically win whatever, no matter what scenario they're in. It seems like they feel confident, they look confident. I think actually England are probably going to top the pool. Now, I probably wouldn't have said that 6 months ago.
I think they will top the pool. I really do. You know, they said they found the way to win, and that Wales game in Cardiff might have been the standout one where they thought they couldn't find a way to win. And I think question marks were probably raised after sort of the Six Nations, the performance and capitulation against Scotland, if you like, yeah, was worrying. But like you say, Joe, I think to have played Wales at the time where they were coming in 14 games unbeaten, you then play Ireland, who at the start of this year, everyone was tipping to win the World Cup after their performance against New Zealand, and then finishing off with a convincing scoreline against Italy, whether the performance was clean cut or not. I think you have to say now England are pool favourites, and I do expect them to win all four.
Yeah.
I do expect them to beat France and Argentina, as well as Tonga and the USA. So, yeah, I think England will get through to the quarterfinals, and then from then on in, anything can happen in the World Cup.
Yeah, so let's move on to France. France, coached by Jacques Brunel, have had a kind of a mixed warm-up to the World Cup. They beat Italy in France. They beat Scotland in France, but their only away game, they lost away at Murrayfield to Scotland. So it's uncertain to say, because the thing is, at the end of the Six Nations, it looked like France finally had some sort of settled halfback partnership, whatever, some combinations that seem to be working for them. And all of a sudden, in these warm-up games, I know you can't really take much out of them, but it does seem like that Brunel's been playing again.
Yeah, I think they're in a better position than they were 6 months ago. Mm. I think they do sort of have a lot of star quality at their disposal, which is starting to settle. Whether it's settled fully, we'll have to wait and see until this World Cup, because they've got, no doubt, they've got the ability, and it does seem like they're more stable in terms of selection and not playing players out of position and trying new things. And they may have been experimental in the warm-up games, which any international team in any sport will try and do when it's an international friendly, whatever, before a big tournament, to try different things out. But I do think France will be very pleased in terms of this time last year, what direction they were heading in. Mm. Not many people knew. Certainly after the Six Nations, it didn't look, especially that game against England, it didn't look very positive for them. But France been France. They've been big challenges in this tournament over the last few years or so, the last couple of editions of the tournament, sorry. So I do expect them to finish second behind England. And much as I do like the way Argentina play, and I'm a big fan of them and sort of their rise over the last 4 years or so, I do think France will finish second.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the likes of Demba Bamba. Of course, he's kind of burst on the screen.
I think he was in my Six Nations fantasy.
He was in mine as well, because I had to counteract the points that he was getting you. I still won.
That's why tactical, I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah, I'll do anything to win.
If my thing hadn't glitched on the first round of the games, I would have challenged you for the title.
You would have actually probably won, I think.
I would have challenged you. I don't know whether I won, but I would have, at least it would have gone in with a bit of interest into the final round of matches in the middle of March.
There was a good 100 points in it at the end, I think.
I know. I was disappointed. I don't know what happened on that first game. I swear I had a few Wales players in as well when they beat France.
That's so probably what went wrong. Might have been playing well. Might have got the wins, but I don't think anyone really played that well. Apart from Alan Wynne-Jones, God. So
Schorf was gifted a couple of tries, if I remember, or one try.
Against France, yeah. But then he also gifted them one in the first half.
Yeah.
There we go. Interesting facts with me and Chris. We'll move just on to Argentina now. Only recently started selecting players from outside Argentina, because the Jaguares were very much in... Well, it just seemed like the Jaguares were the national team, but now they've got the international players, but they don't seem to be moving in any direction, never mind forwards or backwards.
I mean, we spoke before on when we recorded our video show for Head of the World Cup, Joe, about the form they've been in during the warm-up games, if you like. In the rugby championship, it was for Argentina, no wins for them. But that run stretches back, I think, till at least the middle this time last year. I think it's 8 or 9 or maybe even more test matches they've lost in a row now. It is worrying for them, because 4 years ago, it was all about the Southern Hemisphere, wasn't it?
Yeah, the
semi-finals were completely dominated by the Argentina. Everyone seemed to love in the knockout stages. They really played some great rugby. They probably, when the pool was probably drawn and the way that they were going in Super Rugby, they would have thought, right, we've got a chance here, second or even toppling England. They would have had a chance.
Because the Jaguars have had good domestic seasons.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. They got to the final, didn't they, of Super Rugby, or at least the semis.
You're asking the wrong person.
I'm pretty sure they got to the final and were beaten by Crusaders. Might be wrong.
Yes.
I might be wrong.
Yes, no, you're right.
Please correct me if I am. But again, they would have probably fancied the chance. They've got all these players playing together week in, week out, as much as they can. The chemistry's already there. You're coming up against a France side that looked a little bit unsettled, not sure where they're going in. England were sort of in a mist of, well, they get a good result against Ireland, but then fall away against Wales and again against Scotland at Twickenham. So they would have fancied the chances, but you fast forward to now, Argentina will be targeting that front opening game against France to try and
win. They have to.
They absolutely have to. If they lose... Okay, if they lose by a narrow margin, they'll feel, right, we're still in this. But if they lose by, you know, a comfortable margin in terms of France's favour, I think they will probably be saying, right, that's as good as we get, because I do think England will have too much for them.
Well, I have two Argentinians in my fantasy rugby side for the World Cup. So I need Cabelli and Sanchez. I got the halfback pair in, I thought.
Sanchez, good shout.
Yeah, well, he kicks all his goals. Yeah. Top point scorer at the last Rugby World Cup. Thinking ahead. I tapped my head there, by the way.
Yeah, I remember in that bronze medal match, he was on four. I think, I'm pretty sure he had an absolutely storming game in terms of keeping the scoreboard ticking over. So yeah, it's a good shot, Mark.
Apparently he's not played well for Stade Francais though, so hopefully that doesn't translate into
different player in Argentina shirt.
It's true, actually. Different player in Argentina. Didn't do much for the Jaguares, so I've heard. The other teams in England's pool are the USA and Tonga. We'll kick off by looking at one of my other specialist subjects, which is the USA. Chris, grill me.
Okay, Joe. Warm-up games.
See.
How much did they learn from that, do you think? Because obviously they were... They've obviously played against Canada. Obviously, a bit of a conflict of interest for you there. But yeah. How much do you think they learned from those games, and how much can they really compete, do you reckon, in this sort of pool with Argentina, France, and obviously England?
Well, the first game against Canada, which was their 47-19 win in Glendale, I think that's disregarded. I think that didn't show anything, because Canada just weren't a team then. They had, I think, actually, because of how long ago that actually was, I think that they'd only had maybe 2 weeks together, had Canada, in comparison to some of the other teams that had been together for God knows how long. Like, well, I was texting one of the USA boys the other day, and they've already been together something like 2 months. So by the time that game had been played, they'd already been together for a month. They all know each other quite well anyway. The other games, I'm trying to think, they only lost against Japan, which probably is about right when you think about
it. Yeah, probably about.
They beat, I think they beat, it was Tonga or Samoa or Fiji. I've gone a bit blank, sorry. But no, I think they had a really good run-up, and they were one of the two teams that could have won the PNC, which is the Pacific Nations Championship. And I think that whatever Gary Gold has done, whether it's recruiting players from South Africa that have US heritage, and it's all legit. Like, there's a Ruben de Haas, who's a scrum half, plays for the Free State Cheetahs in the Pro 14. Born in America, plays in South Africa, so finding that kind of player who's only 20 years old. So A, he's going to be the future of USA rugby at 9. B, he's a bloody good player, and C, it's the kind of recruitment only someone like Gary Gold could have done. Because the unique thing about the USA setup is that all the coaches live somewhere else. Not many of them live in the States. Actually, Gary lives in South Africa, and I think that's probably the main appeal for him actually doing the job. So yeah, no, I think the USA are going to come and feel good. I think they'll... I previously said they were going to beat England. And I know I said earlier today I might have to rescind that. And I think I am going to. I think that the USA will beat Argentina.
Big call. It's not... That could be a really interesting game. I'm not sure exactly the date of that.
It's in the middle of the rounds.
That could be a really interesting game, depending on how France get on against Argentina in the opening game.
I think France are a good team, and I think they've got a good pack. Whereas with Argentina, I feel like there's a fair amount of disparity among the forwards. I mean, they've got some great forwards, but they've got a lot of age groups. Sorry, I've just had a burping fit. They've got a lot of age groups in between all that. So I think, for me, I'm going to say that the USA will beat Argentina, whenever that may be.
You will have to get up at, well, 6:15 in the morning on Wednesday the 9th of October, Joe. Penultimate game. Well, it's our actual Argentina and France's final game. Argentina and France. Argentina's final game of the tournament. That one. And
oh, so it means nothing. Game. Means might mean nothing.
Well, it might mean everything for Argentina.
Well,
if it's our final game.
Well, the USA are probably going to be targeting that third place so they can secure qualification for 2023 in France. France don't have to worry. France could just massively capitulate.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to worry about qualification for the next World Cup. So I think the USA will win a game that we do not expect. And if I had to put my money on it now, I'd say Argentina.
Not a bad shout. And just to finish that point off, Joe, you made, it's great that sort of the direction the USA rugby are going in. You know, the way Gary Gold is thinking, or whatever USA rugby staff is thinking, is go and target these players who have, you know, USA heritage. It's a great way of doing it. And I think that is shown in terms of the growth of, obviously, what you cover, Joe, the MLR. The growth of the game over the last 2 years has been really positive. Everything coming out of it's been positive. The player pool's good. Player participation, I presume, has gone up.
Yes, yeah, it massively has. And I think when the new Major League Rugby season kicks off, I hope we do a bit of a podcast. Maybe after the first weekend, you guys could watch some games. Maybe we'll do like a live watch along for Major League Rugby on TRU. I don't know. We'll try and do something, because obviously Major League Rugby is something I'm massively passionate about. It's something I started when I first started with TRU 18 months ago this week. How crazy is that? So 18 months ago, that's when I started the whole Major League Rugby on TRU. And now I'm very fortunate enough to be in a position to write for the league. I'm in regular contact with people there and stuff like that. So it's... I hope that we do something for it on TRU, like we're going to hopefully do with Bucks Super Rugby, the national leagues like we already do for the NCAA. So yeah, I think USA are going to do great, and we'll just move on to Tonga, who unfortunately are a bit of a footnote in this pool. Awful preparation for the tournament, only beating Canada, even though that was despite a late Canada rally in the second half. So it was only by 10 points in the end, and then they lost 92.7 to the All Blacks the other week.
Yeah, it's not great. And speaking to who's going to be covering our pool coverage for this is Ben Mercer. Mm. Speaking to him last week, he was saying he thinks they're the weakest Islander team in the competition, yeah, with Samoa and Fiji. Yeah, I mean, I think if the highest moment was maybe 2011, I think it was. I think they may have beaten France or one of the tier one nations.
It might have been 2007.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was their sort of big moment. And I think the big moment's going to come this time around, Joe. It probably will be against the USA or maybe even Argentina, but I can't see it happening. I think Argentina and the USA will have too much for them, as England and France will probably have too much for Argentina and USA. But I may have to be proven wrong again, but I do think it's going to be a difficult, well, obviously an enjoyable experience, a new experience, but a difficult one for Tonga on the pitch.
The final pool is, of course, Pool D. Now, you will have noticed that Chris's name hasn't read out to cover a pool yet, and that's because he is covering Pool D. He's managed to speak with Shane Williams, Graham Rowntree, and I spoke to Takeli Naravo, which will head up this whole section. And there's also a bit of a chat that me and Chris have had to have externally from the podcast studio because, of course, Rob Howley was sent home from Japan because of betting violations. So myself and Chris will delve a bit more into that, but that'll come on later in the podcast. Yeah, but first off, here we have Takeli Naravoa, Shane Williams, Graham Rowntree.
Talk about Australia, of course, the country you represent a few times. I mean, I don't even keep up to date with what they've been up to. I mean, are you happy with how they've been performing recently?
No, I mean, they played really well. I mean, last year, week before with the All Blacks, and there was a big big score that they put on against the ABs, which is really a bit not surprising, but really good of just to show how they've bounced back from what they've been through. But I think going to the World Cup, and I have faith in them that they will work hard, and they always do, turn up in the World Cup into big competitions. And I think for me, it's just that I'm proud of how they've come this way, and just probably wish them all the best in it.
Just believe in themselves. Be a bit arrogant in the fact that you're one of the favourites to win the World Cup now.
Yeah.
Believe in yourselves, go and do it. And I think that's something perhaps Wales have lacked in the past, but they have it in abundance at the moment.
Yeah, you mentioned that strength and depth, Shane, which I think is really key. Do you think this is sort of the best Welsh squad in terms of the tools at their disposal, the tools at Warren's disposal to really challenge for the big prize this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've been lucky to play in some great teams, good squads that have won Grand Slams and big games. But you know, we probably didn't have the strength and depth in which Wales have at the moment. Mm. You know, I think Wales have proven that they can put a 15-man team out 1 week and completely ring the changes and still perform the same as they did the following. Perhaps Wales haven't been able to do that or had the luxury of doing that over the years. Yeah. So, without doubt, I think this is probably the strongest Welsh squad that I've certainly seen in my lifetime.
I'm accustomed to taking each game as a game, playing the Grand Slam champ, in a matter of days. So that is taking all of our interest at the moment. But understanding that to advance and qualify for a World Cup again, automatically we've got to win against Uruguay and Fiji. But that will take care of itself after the Wales game Monday.
Yeah, no, really looking forward to this, Joe. I think when I first was given the pool, I was interested because I've not seen many of those teams play, you know, live before, or certainly watched a number of games when they've been involved in. But obviously, Australia, Wales are the standout too, and I think there's a lot of excitement around Fiji going into the tournament as well. And that first game on Saturday morning, Australia versus Fiji should be an absolute cracker. Australia, there's a lot of talk about how settled they are at the moment. They obviously great win against New Zealand in the Rugby Championship, but they did get beat by the All Blacks, I think 36-0, I think it was. Yeah. So, be interested to see how they've been trying a few different combinations. I know Michael Checker has tried a few things out, and But we know what Australia can do in the World Cup, you know, finalist in 2015. So they have all the credentials to go deep in the competition. I don't think they will. I think they will finish second in this pool. And I do think Wales will top it. Personally, I know Wales and Australia's game, I think, is either the last game or the penultimate game for these two teams. And the record that Wales have against Australia isn't great at all. But I do think Wales on the big stage in the World Cup will show the class. I know they've had a tough warm-up games and have had injuries and stuff like that, but they have a great mix of experience and youth and depth in the squad, and I think that will hopefully for them, they'll see off Australia and finish top of that pool.
Yeah, because that's the thing with Wales, isn't it? They've stumbled across this amazing bit of depth around the, just in the entire nation. I don't know where it's all come from. It seems like there's three or four players that could slot in seamlessly.
I think it was last summer, or it might have been last summer or the autumn, when they went to America and played South Africa, and it was a really, really experimental team for Warren Gatland. And that's the first time I properly noticed how much depth Wales actually have in the squad. And like you say, Joe, it's just, it seems never ending. You know, the amount of players that Warren Gatland could have chosen and stuff like that, and I think that will play a massive part in Wales's Rugby World Cup campaign. Obviously, Shane Williams, he mentioned the strength and depth been a massive thing, but he also said that, you know, regardless of sort of the momentum that was generated from the 14 game winning streak, Wales still have that momentum because they're still a great side, Six Nations champions, and that's something everyone's got to get on board with from a Welsh perspective.
So since myself and Chris recorded the TRU podcast, there's been something that's come to light about Wales' Rob Howley, of course, their backs coach for 11 years now. He's been sent home from Japan by both World Rugby and the Welsh Rugby Union for his part in a kind of, well, a betting scandal, I suppose is the best way to describe it. And I've got Chris on the phone now, and I'm going to essentially, well, not really grill, but I'm going to ask Chris about what he thinks about the situation how it might affect Wales. So, Chris, thank you very much for the time. We are both in the middle of writing things at the minute for the World Cup, so it's not come at the best time for this, has this. Chris, Rob Howley, do you know maybe something about the situation that I haven't already just said?
Well, I was sort of looking and researching it last night, Joe, when we decided we'd have to speak about this. And the Guardian have actually done a really good article this morning. It's really in-depth of what's actually gone on. So apparently the news regarding Rob Howley reached Wales or the Welsh RFU last Wednesday, and they were contacted about the potential scandal that Howley was involved in. And then last Friday, more sort of evidence came to light. So the WRU said, right, we have to get out to Japan and speak to Howley face-to-face. And then Wales informed World Rugby, as you said, Joe, that there has been a potential breach of, I think, what it is, Regulation 6, which covers anti-corruption and betting. And obviously, yesterday, Warren Gatland spoke about it, and he was understandably shocked by the situation. So it's something that's been known to the Welsh, well, definitely the WRU, over the last week or so. And also in that Guardian article, Joe, apparently the leadership group and the players of the Wales squad, so that includes the likes of Alwyn Jones, Tipperick and Dan Biggar-Bates, were told on Monday that Rob Howley was going to be sent home from Japan. And obviously then yesterday the news broke, but it was a shocking revelation for Japan, for Wales just a few days before they get their tournament underway against Georgia on Monday.
Because there's a great feel around Wales at the minute, of course, Six Nations Grand Slams champions. And then on top of that, they've had an all right summer. They were number one for a bit. Do you think this might even derail them before things have even kicked off?
I mean, Gatland was quick to point out that, you know, obviously it's a shock and it took a lot of time to sink in because, as you quite right mentioned at the start, Joe, that he's been working with Howley for 11 years and they've built up such a great relationship and guided Wales to a number of Grand Slams, including this year, and it will take time to sink in, but he's quick to say that let's draw a line under the sand and move on. He praised his players in the press conference, and they've just had to move on from this. They've cracked on with training, and now it's all preparations must be focused on Georgia. Obviously, that's the line that they'll stay and that will come out, but it will most definitely affect the whole team going into that first game. But I think if Wales were playing maybe on Friday, there'd be a bit more spotlight on it. But because they're playing on Monday, obviously it'll be talked about, but as Dan Biggar said, rugby would have been played and Wales would do the talking on the pitch.
Now, they've brought in Stephen Jones a bit earlier than his contract basically says, because, of course, he was going to come in with Wayne Pivac after the Rugby World Cup anyway. It's one of those situations where, for Stephen Jones in particular, he's kind of got to
pick things up as he goes, and he won't even really be able to implement his own strategies that he would have implemented after the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, he would have come in, he must have had a number of discussions with Wayne about how he would take this Wales team forward, and no doubt he's been in contact with Warren Gatland throughout the whole process of, before he comes into the job with Wayne. So you're right, Joe, I don't think he'll be able to implement exactly what he wants, but because of sort of the transition between Gatland and Pivac and Howley coming in as well, I think Howley, Jones coming in, Jones will know full well what Gatland's team are all about and know what to expect. So it will take a little bit of time to adjust, especially for the players, but I'm sure Jones will be aware of exactly what demands and what Gatland wants from his Wales team in attack.
Yeah, Australia, now, it's been a difficult last 4 years for Australia, I'd say, overall. They've had various players taken away from selection, whether that's Israel Folau or the chap that was at the Reds and had a few cocaine... Is it Carmichael Hunt? Had a few cocaine possession charges and stuff like that. So it has been a difficult last few years for Australia, generally. But they got to the final of the 2015 Rugby World Cup, and that was off the back of winning the Rugby Championship in 2015. So I know we world rankings or things that happen before tournaments don't really seem to matter. They don't matter before a Rugby World Cup. But Australia maybe are trending in the right way for once.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think they're always going to be competitors. You know, they're such a strong side. And you said there, Joe, 2015 was where they got to the World Cup final. So they have the class, they have the abilities. Whether the pool, I think, works in their favour, but Fiji first won't be easy.
No.
They get past that, they qualify for the quarterfinals. I do think so. And if they get past that unscathed, it's quite a complete performance from them. Because I know they played, I think it was Samoa a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't straightforward. I know it wasn't straightforward for Australia. I think the scoreline was quite big in Australia's favour.
I think 34-15, 34-17.
Yeah, and I think Samoa gave them a bit of a game. So if they can come through unscathed against Fiji, I don't see them having a problem qualifying for the quarterfinals. And like I just said, I think anything can happen if you get to that last state of a competition. So I do get where you're coming from, Joe, that they sort of can go in the right direction. But I think it rests a lot on the first game for them.
Yeah, I'm just going to make a prediction because I know he's out of contract at the end of the Rugby World Cup. Michael Checker to be coaching France come 2020 Six Nations.
Very, very possible.
There we go. Just a random one. Rugby Rumours, hashtag Rugby Rumours, available on talkingrugbyunion.co.uk. Now, we're going to talk a bit about Fiji. Now, Fiji are one of those teams that always seem to excite everyone in the rugby world. Those white jerseys have become kind of synonymous with rugby. Chris, what was your kind of feeling from talking to Ben about what he thinks that Fiji can do at this Rugby World Cup?
It's funny you mentioned the white shirts becoming synonymous, because I think that really has been a case more so since Ben's achievements with the Olympic side in 2016. Playing Australia first can work in their favour, because they'll go into that game raring to go, with nothing to lose in a way, because it's, you know, such a big game. They'll be just so excited, whereas Australia will want to make sure they get off to a winning start. Fiji would go in there with a lot less pressure on them, if you like, and the ability they've got to cause teams problems in terms of the speed, the flair, the skill, plus the power they've got up front and then the forwards, and it's just incredible. And if they get unleashed, and if Australia play a loose game and don't keep it tight, Fiji could really punish them.
Yeah, the other team in there is Georgia. You're talking to Graham Rowntree tomorrow, the day after we record this. So Georgia, renowned for having a big pack. Are we going to see more of the same, do you think, at this World Cup?
I think it's, you know, because it's renowned, I think they'll try and use it as a weapon. There's some, you know, some big, big lads in there. I think that's the way they'll go with it. But Georgia are a nation which keep knocking at the door. I don't think in terms of this World Cup pool they'll be knocking on the door. I think it, because of the strength for Australia and Wales, and I'd throw Fiji in the mix there. I think they'll just be a little bit lower than perhaps the Fiji, Australia and Wales bracket bars that those teams individually set. For Georgia, I think they will want to show that they are sort of a top six Northern Hemisphere side, because they're trying to displace Italy from the Six Nations as best they can. I know they're trying to get a franchise as well. I think, is it the Pro 14? I think they're trying to get a franchise into as well, just to keep Georgian rugby developing. But with the likes of Graham going over there to do some coaching, you can tell there is something there for Georgia. There is something that they want to to unearth in terms of Rugby Nation. And obviously they've got the backing of the billionaire as well, money. So the money's there. It's just trying to unearth these players to want to play for Georgia and keep that player pyramid, if you like, and the player transition growing in the country. So I think there will be an intrigue because of sort of the story behind them in terms of the money, in terms of the Tier 2 nation, the closest Tier 2 nation people think to breaking into the top tier in terms of the Northern Hemisphere especially. So they'll be an interesting team to watch, I think.
Mm. The final team in the pool is Uruguay. Now, a lot of people might not know loads about Uruguay. Neither, I can't say myself and Chris know a huge amount. What I do know is there's a lot more players playing professional rugby thanks to Major League Rugby. A lot of attacking players. I think that's probably where they're going to be aiming to get to. Aiming to get to the guys in the wings and in the centres.
Yeah, I think it's a familiar story for them as it is with some of the teams we mentioned, you know, your likes of Tongas, etc., who may target individual games to try and get some points and make history and get a result that goes down in their folklore, really. And I think they'll look to potentially the Georgia and maybe even Fiji. I tell you what, if you say, Joe, that, you know, Uruguay will look to the wings and centres, if they play Fiji, that will be an epic watch. If both teams just go full out attack, we could see some ridiculous scoreline in that game. But yeah, I think Uruguay will be there. They'll be loving the experience. They'll want to embrace the World Cup. But I can't see them being in the same class as the other four teams in the pool. But like I keep saying, you know, I'm there to be proven wrong.
Mm. So thank you for listening to the second part of this Talking Rugby Union podcast, where we've been looking at pools C and D that are going to be kicking things off this weekend in Japan. Myself and Chris have very much enjoyed doing this podcast, so please leave it a like, comment, subscribe. Where, I mean, I don't know how you're consuming this content, but please review it if you can. It pushes us up the rankings a bit. We like to think we're pretty good at doing the old podcasts as well. Sorry if this one's felt a bit rushed. We've been a bit pressed for time today. It's just one of those things that happens in life, unfortunately. Big, big crush of things going on before the Rugby World Cup kicks off this Friday. And yeah, so you can follow Talking Rugby Union at Talk Rugby Union on Twitter, at Talking Rugby Union on Instagram, and just type in Talking Rugby Union on Facebook and I'm sure you'll find us. My name's been Joe Harvey. I'm at JoeHarvey34 on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. And Chris is C_Heel on Instagram and Twitter. So please drop him a follow and I'm sure you'll hear us next time.